Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, singer-songwriter Ingrid Michaelson and writer Becca Brunstetter discuss the process of adapting The Notebook, the romance novel by Nicholas Sparks, into a musical for the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. The world premiere musical opens September 6th, 2022. This conversation originally took place August 17th, 2022, and was recorded live at the American Writers Museum. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
I've waited every day to feel the way I feel. Knots in my stomach, the kind that never heal. Butterflies that fly in me and never seem to go away. Sick to my stomach when I think about his face. But in a good way, in a way I can't replace. No one can stop this, it's almost like a hurricane. If this is love, I'm not ready. If this is love, why am I so unsteady? If this is love, why did no one tell me the pain that I would feel? If this is love, maybe I'm ready. How do I know I'm in my head again? If this is love, I think I'm in it. If this is, if this is, if this is love. The world around me says no, but I say yes. I wanna scream it out, instead it's stuck inside my chest. It's like a bird in a rage, in a cage, and nobody wants to free me. If this is love, I'm not ready. If this is love, why am I so unsteady? If this is love, why did no one tell me the pain that I would feel? If this is love, maybe I'm ready. How do I know I'm in my head again? If this is love, I think I'm in it. If this is, if this is, if this is love, if this is, 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 if this is love.
We want to thank you for being here and helping us celebrate the past, present, and future of American writing. At this museum, we believe in great writing in all its forms, whether it's novels, poetry, short stories, journalism, advertising copies, songwriting, and so much more. We're thrilled today to celebrate The Notebook, a new musical adaptation from the Nicholas Sparks novel of the same name. Tonight's program is presented in partnership with Chicago Shakespeare Theater, where The Notebook will have its world premiere on September 6th. Here tonight to talk about the writing and adapting of this iconic work are its music and lyrics and book writers. Book writer Becca Brunstetter was a supervising producer and writer on NBC's Emmy and Golden Globe award-winning series This Is Us. An accomplished playwright, her work has been produced at major regional theaters including Manhattan Theater Club, South Coast Repertory, Atlantic Theater Company, and the Old Globe. Her new musical, AD 16, written in collaboration with Schmigadoon's Cinco Paul, recently premiered at Olney Theaters. She was also a writer and producer of the acclaimed Netflix series Made, garnering a Writers Guild of America award. And known for her distinctively soulful pop style, folk pop style, singer-songwriter Ingrid Michaelson is a force in the music industry with four top 20 albums and two platinum singles, The Way I Am and Girls Chase Boys. Michaelson's nine studio albums have been released on her own independent label, Cabin 24 Records, and her original songs have soundtracked important moments in hundreds of television series and feature films. Michelson made her Broadway debut as Sonia in Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812 back in 2017. They're interviewed tonight by our development director and huge fan of The Notebook, Linda Dunleavy. And so please help me in welcoming Ingrid and Becca to the American Writers Museum.
Makes a fun sound.
Mics are on.
Right. So
hot mic.
Ingrid and Becca, so glad to be here with you talking about The Notebook. Can't wait to see it. Can you start by telling us just how the project came about?
Me? Yeah. Okay. This makes me so anxious. Hi. Okay.
She's very sweaty.
I'm very sweaty and red. I'm sorry. I wore this really heavy canvas jumpsuit to try to be cool, but underneath it's just like a greenhouse. Okay. How did it come about? I looked in my emails and I found an email from 2016 from Kevin McCollum, who was one of the producers of The Notebook. And it wasn't an email. It was in my calendar. It was a meeting that we had set to talk about the fact that I wanted to write a musical. And my partner, where is he? He's in the back. He was in a show that Kevin was producing, and so he introduced us, and I was nervous, and I went to his office, and he talked about he wanted to develop something for a TV show and this other idea and had all these little ideas, and all I kept thinking was like, I want to write a musical, come on, man. And then I must have said that in some form, and he looked at me and he said, "The Notebook." And pointed at me, and I love The Notebook. I hear you love The Notebook. I love The Notebook so much. And I was like, what's happening? And I went to the bathroom and I cried for like 10 seconds. And then I came back and I was like, cool, can we continue this conversation? And he said, yeah, we're in the works to get the rights. And, you know, maybe this is something we can continue to talk about. And I took that as, you have the job, congratulations. Start composing, which I did, and I sent him a song the next day, which is this still in the show. And I just kept sending him songs, and finally he hired me. That's kind of my evolution. Yeah.
Yeah. So it started with you, and then you came in as the writer of the script.
Yeah. I think after Ingrid had written some songs, they needed a book writer. And I heard about it, I met with Kevin, and my first thought was like, The Notebook, the musical, could be really bad or really good. Like,
I remember
I
your
know.
Pitch was Rachel McAdams, but superimposed over Ryan Gosling's face.
Yeah,
was a big
yes,
piece of
because the Notebook
pizza.
Movie is a meme, basically. You know, there's like there's this meme of Rachel McAdams making out with a pizza that I love.
That you put on your, Gosling. You put on the
yeah,
cover
I put that
your...
on my. I did.
I remember that.
But basically. Kevin sent me the music that Ingrid had written, and I realized, oh, this is going to be very beautiful, and I have to be a part of this. So I said yes, and here we are, like 6 years later.
And I think we're the only ones that were asked.
Yeah,
he did say at one point he was like, "You're the only one on the list," and I was like, "The list?"
Yeah.
And
he probably just said that.
Yeah. And I think you were the only one on the list.
Yeah.
They were short lists.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's always good to be on a list.
Good for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you start writing songs, you start writing a script, and then COVID happens. Is that kind of how it went?
Kind of.
We got pretty far. Because it was 2007, mid, like early 2017 to mid is when I think we met and fell in love.
Yes.
I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be... We would finish each other's thoughts. It was...
Yeah.
It was from the beginning. It was like, oh, this is... makes total sense. We have such similar outlooks on life and love and art, and so it was we did a lot of really good work before COVID hit.
We had two workshops before COVID. Yeah. We had one at New York Stage and Film in upstate New York at Vassar, where you're in residence for like a little over a week. You do a reading. And then we had another workshop January 2020 in New York. We had a 2-week workshop. And then we were planning on our first time we were supposed to be here was August
fall.
2020.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the end of August.
Yeah.
I remember we came here for auditions in February of 2020.
Yeah.
And there was all, you know, lots of hand sanitizer everywhere. And we're all like, oh. and then it all changed.
Yeah.
Well, I love hearing that you have such a strong, like, creative partnership, because you just know that's going to result in something great that you want to see. So are there ways that the story of the notebook, like, relates to your own lives, and how, you know, has that affected the creative process of adapting this?
Yes. The idea of loss and persevering through loss, at the time when Kevin, the notebook to me, my mother had passed in 2014, my father was still with us, and then my father passed in 2017 while I was actively writing the music. So this concept of trying to keep the light going when it's very hard to, is kind of my religion. It's an active choice that I still practice this religion daily. Sometimes I don't do as well as other days, but this idea of just, I mean, who said it? Shakespeare, love is the thing. Love is the thing. Love, not always romantic love, but love and connection and human to human contact, which is something that we just are so desperate for now. Even just like, we're in rehearsals with masks. We'll start the day in a circle, and we'll just all take a breath, put our masks down while holding our breath, and stare at each other's faces for like 3 seconds, just so we can see. So I think there's something about love, loss, connection, humanity that is just all rumbling around in my head at all times of the day. And so I get to sort of like put it through like the meat grinder of my brain, and it comes out in song form, song sausages for you all.
Yeah. Yes, I love it.
Yeah.
Ew.
They're delicious. And I have a lot of Alzheimer's in my family. Mm-hmm. My grandfather, who actually just passed away last month, suffered from it for many, many years. And my uncle got it when he was only 55. He's about 5 years in now. So that was really, having seen with that ditch in my family and my grandparents, and it just, I love attaching myself to anything that I've lived in any way, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was just kind of like showing this you know, story, this love story at the end of these couple's lives was really, felt really important to me. Just like the lasting, just like a hopeful love story. I love working on anything that is hopeful and that, you know, encourages people to find love.
Right. Yeah. And you know, that the whole Alzheimer's, you know, at the end, when they're at the end of their lives, is really the most touching, like, you know, it's the, you know, and when you bring your own experience to that, I mean, it's, of course, it's universal for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
So now that it's written and the songs are written and it's cast and you're rehearsing it and you're actually doing it, does it continue to evolve and change a little bit as you rehearse and as the actors take those lines and put them out themselves, you know, all of that? Like, what happens when you're actually bringing it to life with people?
This is my first time doing this. Becca, it has done many plays, and she's done one musical very recently before this, so you have a lot more sort of say on this, but as a virgin to this, like, it's wild how once you're really seeing things with actors on stage repeatedly, you really see what works and you really see what doesn't work. And so for me, song-wise, I've had to cut a whole thing, just gone, please, never again. I don't want to ever think about it ever again. But it took a while you have to see it. You kind of have to see it. Yeah, it has to like embarrass itself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like you have to make the mistake. It's not there. It's not the actors. It's me, you know? So I have to really see it happen. And then, but my barometer for cheese is pretty, I'm pretty sensitive. So I feel very bad because I'll just yank a song out from under people, but listen, that's what has to happen. So yeah, it's been really eye-opening to see something that, and then there are other things that I was like, not even, like, I was like, oh, I love that thing. And then I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. And then there are other ones that I'm like, well, I don't think that's going to work. And then you shift one line, yeah. Like what just happened. I'm not going to say where it is, but you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You take out that one line. I was like, oh, I don't hate this song anymore. Yeah, because of the way that it because of the way that the songs, this is not a musical where the dialogue stops and then a song begins. This is a musical where the dialogue and the songs are so interwoven, literally in some moments, that they cannot exist without the other. And I think that's something that is really important in when you're writing a musical play, is that it's a musical play. It's not just a musical. The dialogue and the scenes are so important, because without them, the songs just they're not grounded in any reality. So I think it's been really crazy for me to see how small, seemingly small edits in the book shift the songs. That's been the mm-hmm. wildest thing for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and for the book, the rehearsal process is just trimming, 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 like haircut, 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 you know?
Yeah, because,
and I think that's why musicals get 90 million workshops before they get a production, because so much of this trial and error happens in those workshops before you get to the production. And it has to happen, because we go into tech next week. I think we're just in our third or fourth week of rehearsal. It's the musicals are beasts, and by the time you're starting rehearsal in your 4 weeks before your 10 days of tech and you start previews, you don't have tons of time to discover things anew necessarily. So we did a lot of, you know, character work, throwing out new scenes, writing new scenes, a lot, you know, updating the time period from the 40s, 50s, 90s to the 60s, 70s present. A lot of that happened in workshops in person and over Zoom. So by the time we start rehearsal, my job is just cutting the fat every day, just like making the book as lean as it possibly can be to just gear up Ingrid's music.
Yeah, and that's what the writing process should always be.
You know? Yeah, definitely.
The least amount of words.
Not being precious about stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Neither of us are.
Yeah.
Almost to a fault, I think. I'm like, nah, take it.
No, every now and then Michael asks me to cut a line, and I'm like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
But mostly,
every once in a while.
Then I'm like, you're right.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. It's,
if I feel that if way, you it's
feel,
right.
Yes, if you feel too strongly, you're like, I'm probably wrong.
Yeah.
I'm too connected to this for some reason.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I find that just sort of giving up to the collaborative process and listening to people who have done this before, this is for me speaking for myself, because again, first time, but listening to people that know what they're doing, that you respect, and even if you think it might not be the right thing, most of the time it is the right thing.
Yeah,
it's so collaborative. If you're living in a bubble and you're not taking in anybody else's suggestions, and I've heard stories of composers like that sort of just write their thing and that's it, and that's the way it is.
Uh-huh.
And that's wild to me, because I then you're just neutering the creative flow, you know. And so I welcome the challenge that it is to let go of things, because for me it is hard to let go and to not have control over every minute detail. Yeah. But this is a real exercise in just letting go and letting the collaborative wave take over.
Yeah. And so does that come from, I suppose, the director, the actors,
all,
it's a whole team,
each other?
Yeah,
it comes from, if you're open to it, it comes from everywhere. It comes from my friends, my loved ones, my partner,
yeah,
the director, Becca. You know, I ask people things because I truly want to know, mm-hmm. you know, what they think. And then sometimes I'll change it. Most times I'll change it.
Do changes ever happen after opening night?
They cannot.
Really?
Yes, they cannot. Yeah. It, the everything becomes locked.
Oh, I suppose it's like a commodity. It's a
thing. Yeah. I just have one other musical that opened in February, and I had like 4 pages of new script stuff to get in that we just were never able to get to that will just hopefully make it into the next production.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, you just have to like let it be what it is and learn from it and think about what you'll fix for next time, because it just sort of like freezes. Yeah. Because otherwise, like, the actors don't get a chance to live in it. You could pick at it forever.
Yes.
You know, at a certain point, it has to be what it is for this production. And then you think about what you'll do next and you just kind of move on.
I have a little bit more flexibility in terms of if one actor doesn't have the same range as another actor, we can find alternate melodies so that person isn't stressing out and not being able to hit certain notes. As long as the orchestration isn't changed, you can kind of like have, you know, your if you can't hit that high D, you can go down to the whatever note, you know. Mm-hmm. And obviously I encourage people to sing as high and as loud as they can. What you watched, the video was me singing, that song is actually 5 keys higher. So wow. I sing, I have a low voice, but I do like when people can sing high and loud, sorry. But, you know, if you know, it's good to have a fail safe. If your actor is tired and they've been singing and it's their 16th show in a row and they need to go down to a different note. I mean, those kinds of things, as long as it doesn't affect the orchestrations, we have a tiny bit of room to flex in there.
Yeah. So let's talk about writing a little bit. So Ingrid, this is writing, you know, for an adaptation of a play that's been written, a story that exists. So that's got to be different than your own songwriting, your usual songwriting.
Yes.
And also you've got
a teapot.
I'm sorry. I wish we had a fan.
Okay. I'm listening.
And also I just learned there's like all an orchestra on stage. So, they're playing the music and you're just, it's got to be just a different writing process.
It is very different because I'm not writing from necessarily my point of view, but I'm writing to further the storyline, and I'm writing for these characters. Oh, what have you got? Oh my gosh. Bless you. Yay. Now I look like I'm in a Whitesnake video. I just want to like, okay. Excuse me.
Do you need me to fan you while you
talk? No, this is great. No, I'm good. I'm burning calories at the same time. Remember in grade school, your teacher's like, that's just going to make you hotter. And I was like, why? Like the act of fanning you would make you hot. Was that a lie that I was told?
No, I remember that.
Yeah, it just makes you hotter because you're expending energy. I was like, fool, I'm cold over here, okay? All right. Yes, it's very different. It's very different. I'm trying to get back on course. The story of my life. I did, however, just write my last record, besides a holiday record, was based off of, inspired by Stranger Things. So I did write all these songs kind of loosely from the point of view of these characters. Mm-hmm. So it was a really nice segue into the musical, because I was like, well, I'm kind of embodying these characters in my record. And obviously most of these songs have a little bit of me in them. Like my songs aren't necessarily like, let me bring this bottle to you, Becca, here's this bottle, take this bottle. You know, it's more esoteric, kind of poetic in some ways. There are some very specific lines in there because there has to be. But I'd be lying if I said that my own personal experience and heart and soul weren't embedded in many of these songs. So it is very different, but there's also threads of similarity.
Right. Yeah. But that's why we want to see it, because it's Ingrid Michaelson. So,
oh, I hope so. Thank you.
And Becca, you have, you know, written for television and other things. I mean, writing for the stage is it's got to be a different process of just like real people working this out.
Yeah. Well, I think like Ingrid's making me think that like I've actually done a lot of adaptation. I did an adaptation of Medea. I did a Lysistrata adaptation. I did an Oklahoma adaptation as a TV pilot. A lot of work has been like, take the story that exists and find yourself in it, you know, which is what I think you have to do when you're adapting something that exists. You take the bones and you find yourself in it, and because I can't write anything unless I find myself in it, you know, so I've had to do that. And then, yeah, it's similar to TV writing in the sense that you start with a draft that's way too long and way too expensive to produce, and then you go through the process of trimming it down. Mm-hmm. So it has to be economical. It has to be spare. You have to figure out how to say everything you need to say in the least amount of scenes with the least amount of words, mm-hmm. you know? So it's definitely the two things kind of speak to each other in that way, which is different from theater. Like with a play, you can sort of like let the scenes breathe a little bit more, but definitely with the musicals, I'm just setting up Ingrid's music, you know? And while I'm doing that, I also need to like move the plot forward and like slyly slide some exposition in there and, you know, reveal character. So there's a lot going on, but it has to be very spare, which is hard. It's really hard and something I'm still learning how to do.
Like she doesn't do.
I'm still learning.
her book is incredibly, it's funny. Like you don't, when you hear a notebook, you don't think, that's gonna be a laugh riot. But honestly, there are some moments that are so funny, many moments. So I think you're quite incredible at what you do.
And I think it's honestly my new favorite kind of writing. If I could just write books for musicals for the rest of my life, I'd be very happy.
Oh,
because I've always been a playwright, and then I started doing television to pay off my massive grad school debt from playwriting. And I love doing TV, but just writing for musicals puts me back where I originally was, you know?
Yeah.
And cool. I just love it. I love it. So I want to do it more. We'll do another one
one
day.
So.
We will.
Yeah. Everyone do one without you.
Just knowing we'll how much you love it, it makes me so excited to see it.
We do love it.
Yeah, we're gonna be like two crying people in the balcony every preview
with everybody else basically. In the audience. I'm
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, bring your tissues. I'm just gonna say.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, so neither of you are from Chicago, but you're temporarily residing in Chicago, and you're going to debut this play in Chicago at Chicago Shakespeare. What has that been like? How do you like Chicago? How do you think it's going to go?
Oh my gosh. I like it very much. I mean, I walk from my apartment to the theater and then back to my apartment. I have had some yummy dinners. The food here is no joke. And I know the town to be theatrically smart, mm-hmm. but not cruel. Mm-hmm. Like my hometown of New York can sometimes be. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that people will appreciate it and give us good criticism and but you know, with a hug.
Yeah, I get it.
And some of my best, my favorite productions of my plays have been in Chicago. I just think the actors are superb, and mm-hmm. like Ingrid was saying, the audiences are really smart. So it just feels like the perfect place to try it with an audience for the first time and just see how it feels.
Yeah, I think you're going to find that audiences are just going to be really receptive to this, especially I think, you know, Shakespeare has very deep fans, and, you know, anything that's there, we're just going to love it.
So. I mean, The View, every day you look out and you're right on the water, and there's that pirate ship that comes in.
Yeah.
I've seen multiple weddings on one of this yeah. boat that's out there. It's just like, yeah, it's just, even when it rains, it's like romantic. Yeah. And
it's clean New York. Is that what you guys call it? Right?
Clean New York.
It's like, yeah, the water is like not brown.
Yeah, it's like sparkly.
How do you do that?
It's probably dye, right?
Blue dye, blue number 5.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on to you. Our lovely brown green water in New York.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me, after all this, what do you just hope like that the audience will come away with as they're leaving the theater with their damp tissues, you
know? Their damp masks. Yeah. I it's a hard question for me because that's been asked a couple times now. Yeah. I think it's what I want people to feel when they come to one of my shows, which is just the freedom to go through all of the human emotions that we're lucky enough to have, you know, mm-hmm. and just to feel and to be in a room with other people feeling the same, similar, if not the same things, is just such a treasure that I treasure even more so now, obviously, since it was taken away from us for so long. But I think there's a collective human feeling thing that this is the American Writers Museum, and I just said human feeling thing, but you know what I mean. I just want people to feel comfortable to let themselves go and to know that we'll catch them.
Yeah, and it is a weird question, because it's like we just hope people feels good things.
We want them to like it.
We want them to like it.
But like us.
Yeah, but I think the thing that we both come back to is also like we take so much for granted. We take our time on Earth for granted. We take our families for granted. And just coming out of the show with a renewed sense of just a reminder to call your parents and call your brother who you don't talk to and tell your husband you love them and all of those really just like big human-y feeling-y things.
Leave that one guy for that other guy.
Yeah, and exactly.
Just kidding.
Don't marry him. Go back to the guy you knew when you were 16. And
steal your daughter's letters.
Yes.
Like, don't ever give her.
Oh. Yes. Yeah. Wear the blue dress. Buy it. But yeah.
Just love it and love us. No, we just want people to experience experience theater in the way that it should be, which is just in a room together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, celebrating the fact that we can all do this thing together and feel these feelings together. And I think that's what any great theater does, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I love musicals because you know when you see one that you love and you go away singing it, and it's like in your head for the next forever. And now we live in Spotify world, so you can go home and stream whatever the soundtrack is. Like, I don't know when we'll be able to stream these, I'm not sure, but I also kind of hope, like, Ingrid will send me, I'll listen to a song one time, and it literally is still in my head 6 years later. And your music before, that's what Ingrid writes, those kinds of songs. And I feel like every song in this musical is like that. So there's also the hope that, like, you take the music with you, you know, and you keep hearing it, and then you get to listen to it whenever we're streaming it, whenever that is, I have no idea. But that you come see it again, and you tell people you love to come see it, and that it is contagious.
And it has its own life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without us. I was thinking about that with this. It's such a huge thing that we're creating. And there's so many people that are creating it with us. But we're the mommies, you know, and we're going to send it off to school, and then it's going to have its own relationship with many people and have many different incarnations. And that's it. And that's, to me, that's everything, is that it gets to go out in the world, hopefully, mm-hmm. and be performed in many places and different languages. And, you know, that's a real hope.
And it can, because it's a timeless story. Yeah. And it's a beautiful story. And it's just like a story that we need. You know, you can just not think about the news for 2 hours. Yeah. You know, just like, it'll be a fantastic escape. Yeah. Yeah.
We should take out when Ellie gets monkeypox. We'll take it out.
Yeah. Maybe.
Okay.
The whole vaccine number we should cut. It's too current. JK, you guys. JK.
It's been a weird couple of years.
I think, I'm sure that people out there have some questions. So Allison, people have been writing them down, and Allison's going to read some of them.
Our first question is, what are your favorite musicals?
Oh, snap.
Oh, man.
My favorite of like recent memory, Strange Loop and Hadestown. And then obviously Hamilton and Rent, obviously. Those are probably like my top four.
Oh man, mine are weird. Okay, they're not that, okay. Sideshow, anyone? Okay, Children of Eden? Ragtime, a little less weird. Sound of Music, Dear Evan Hansen. And The Notebook.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of questions that are somewhat related to that. For Ingrid, we all know you love Christmas. Which Christmas story would you want to adapt into a musical?
Ooh. Well, you don't. What you don't know is that Becca is it you guys. Becca also loves Christmas equally as much as I do. Well, okay, yes.
It's hard.
It's hard. It's a tie.
You have more outfits than I do.
What I want to do into a musical? I don't know. I think I kind of wanted to make something original, but I feel like if I had like my choice of like anything, I think it already has been done, mm-hmm. but It's a Wonderful Life. I think it's already been done though.
Yeah.
Right? Or yeah. It's in the works.
It's happened, I'm pretty sure. I think it exists.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oops.
The reason why Notebook is so great is because there's fantastical elements about it. We're in memory, we're playing with memories. There's, you know, a younger version of a character's self singing with that person. You know what I mean? There's all these, so I feel like It's a Wonderful Life is all about, you know, it's fantasy. So that leads to, oh, totally this can sing. You know, there are some movies where you're like, they should not be singing, no. But yeah, that would be my pick.
Yeah.
Also, it's almost time to start watching Christmas movies.
I know.
In the Ember months, forget about October, in the Ember months, September, October, November, December. And then I fall into a deep depression. I'm not kidding.
We have questions about advice for writers. For Ingrid, the question is about advice to aspiring songwriters. For Becca, advice to aspiring playwrights.
Oh my gosh, advice. Is somebody a songwriter in here?
Not yet.
Hi, not yet. You know, I asked this. I remember I was driving years ago in New York and I was listening to some local New York station and there was, what was the guy's name? Who sang that song? I'm just a man in a little red cape, something or something, something. Five for Fighting. There we go. My memory is not great. And he was like, yeah, he was doing an interview and he's like, my number is this, if anyone, or my email is this, if anybody has any questions. And I was like, what? So I emailed him. And I said, hey, I heard your interview on FUV or whatever it was. And what advice would you have for someone who's starting out? And it was one line. He said, don't let the vultures change you. And I was naive and I was like, oh, well, what does that mean? But now I know. I think, you know, obviously be open to collaboration and other people's opinions, but for me, I always find that I feel my most authentic self and I produce the most authentic music when I am listening to my inner compass and not allowing the outside noises to get in there too much. So, because there's no guarantee that you're gonna make enough money to make a living, I always said, if I don't, if by the time I'm 27, I'm not making enough money to sustain myself, then I'm going to stop trying to do this. And I was also teaching musical theater for kids, and I was also waiting tables, and I was also a barista at a coffee house. And I was like, I'm just going to work on teaching kids full time. I get healthcare through them, like, and I'm just going to stop. And close to my 27th birthday, I got my first Grey's Anatomy placement, and that was like everything just took off from there. I was like, just made it. Now, who would have, would I have stopped really when I was 20? I don't know, but I was definitely feeling the squeeze of having to, you know, live a life without money. And, but I feel like as long as you're doing it because you love it and not because you want to be famous or you want to make, I always said, I'm always going to do open mics. I'm always going to do small shows. I'm always going to do music. I'm always going to write. I'm always going to do that because I have to. So you do it because you have to do it, and you follow your inner voice, and you can't not be successful in terms of your soul being successful. You know what I mean? And now there's so many ways of doing shows and live stream and you know, putting things on TikTok or whatever the kids do, but just don't do something because you think somebody else wants you to do it. Do it because you want to do it. I think that's what I would say. The vultures. Don't the vultures change you.
I love that. I also, when I was 27, was like out of money and was going to move home to North Carolina with my parents because I couldn't afford rent the next month. And then I got a call from a theater that I'd gotten like a grant for like $5,000 or something, and that kept me in New York and then kept me writing plays. It's so nuts, those weird little I give up moments and then the things that save you from those. I think with playwriting and probably any kind of writing, the hardest thing to do is to keep writing. And the most important thing to do is to keep writing. And the thing that for me keeps me from writing is when I'm comparing myself to other people. Mm. The way I like to think about it is like tricking yourself into thinking that you're the only playwright in the world, or the only songwriter in the world, or the only novelist in the world. Like, you've got this little secret skill that no one else has. And then surround yourself with a few people who get you and who get your voice, and just kind of stay in that bubble, because especially when you're first starting out, that's the only way you're going to keep writing, and writing from that safe place of confidence. Because once the world starts coming in, like, it's just becomes impossible to write truthfully. And I think that's when the vultures start to get you, is when you're trying to be a writer that you're not. You know, you're seeing who's winning the Pulitzer Prize for drama, or like who's getting the awards, who's getting this. And you're like, well, maybe I should be writing like that. And the moment you start trying to write like that, that you're screwed, you know, like you've lost yourself. So yeah, don't do that.
We have a question for both of you. What character was hardest to write for? Did their musical theme or voice come easily or not come easily?
There definitely was one song that was very hard for me to write because I didn't understand why it needed to exist. I cannot tell you more. I can talk around it. Literally until 2 days ago. And it was the change of the word that I was speaking about earlier, or is taking out of a line. It teed up the song in a way that it hadn't before, and it made the song all of a sudden valid and make sense. Thank God, because it was worrying me. But yeah, and it's not necessarily, it's hard to write for a character, but it's like, do we need this character to sing? Why is this character singing? Oh, because we have to have this song in here because this character has to. It's like, there's always that song in a musical where you're like, oh no. Okay, the uncle's singing now, you know? About his childhood. You're like, God damn it. We almost made it. And so that was a fear of mine. And but I do not have that fear anymore, I can say, which is really a relief.
Well, I think that character was probably the hardest to write, but you don't want to say who it was.
Yeah.
So I also will not say who it was. But I get the thing that is always hard is
it's interesting that we have the same makes sense. But I love.
I think we found
something. Oh, thanks.
It's just finding
handy for secrets.
Like, the hardest thing is always finding the humanity.
Yeah,
I guess.
And the authenticity and the believability.
Yeah.
We have a question from one of our viewers online. So thank you for that.
Oh.
Who wants to know
happening.
Where are they seeing us from?
There's cameras.
Where?
Everywhere.
It's live streamed.
That's not a camera.
That's a camera. And that's a camera.
That's a camera and that's a camera?
Yeah.
Oh.
So their question is when will The Notebook be making its way to Broadway?
That's a good question. I'd like to ask our producer. We don't know that answer.
Yeah.
I think the hopeful answer would be sometime in the spring, but I think it really just with COVID and closures and a lot of plays and musicals coming in, which is lovely and wonderful. It just, there's only 41 houses, so you got to wait your turn.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I'm hopeful it's next year, but in terms of timing, we really don't know.
Yeah, but it will be there.
Oh, it will.
Yeah.
If whoever is here reviews it well, it will. So if you're watching Chicago Tribune,
you're going to break these people's hearts.
Don't mess up. New York needs us too.
I had a lot of questions about comparisons to the book itself and to the film. And so one of them is, you worry about comparisons to the movie. And how do you process and handle those concerns if you have them?
We set out early on to not make The Notebook the movie, the musical. If you love the movie, you're going to see a lot of things that you recognize, but we've made a piece of theater, you know? So our hope is that has always been that we take enough of a departure that there's not too much of a comparison. Like, nobody's hanging from a Ferris wheel. Like, you know, we're not trying to like recreate iconic scenes necessarily, but at the same time, that love story is there, you know? So it'll feel really familiar, but I don't think you'll be like watching it with the movie in your head, double screen, comparing them necessarily. Our hope is really to like take you to a sort of other place and create something new.
From the very beginning, our philosophy was, if you want to see The Notebook, you can watch it anytime. It's on all the time.
Yeah.
I will watch it halfway through. I will watch it wherever I, oh, there it is. Okay, let's go. Yeah. If you want to watch the movie, watch the movie. That's not what we are doing. We intentionally have created, it's an extension. It's an alternate avenue to the movie. Obviously the characters' names, the storyline, the feeling it gives you, the feeling it gives you is there. It's right. It's spot on. But it's done in a way, I am so thankful. I feel like it's elegant, and we changed things, but we didn't change things to the point where it's this completely different story.
Yeah.
I personally, when I see a movie musical adaptation, I don't want to see the same thing that I see on the screen, because I can see that on the screen. And so I think we're going to get people that are like, meh, meh, meh.
He's not hanging from the Ferris wheel.
That's not Ryan Gosling.
She doesn't say, call me a bird.
Yes, there's nothing about
nobody,
a bird.
No
bird. Sorry.
Birds.
There might be rain. Maybe. If it's in the budget. but yeah. We've always felt very strongly that we didn't want to just do a carbon copy of the movie, because you just can't. So don't put your poor actors in a position where they're going to have to do impressions of Rachel McAdams and Ryan Gosling falling in love.
Yeah, and we love the movie. It's not that we don't love the movie.
No, I adore the movie.
Yeah,
the movie,
it's just like, why try and put it on stage?
Yeah, it's just you're asking for, in my opinion, you're asking for just some sort of failure and comparisons that are not going to be favorable. And the lovely thing about theater is that we get to be so much more weird, and we get to have three different sets of alleys, and they get to be different ethnicities, and we get to push times into different areas. Like, we get to have present day, where you watch the movie, present day is like 2003 or something. It's like this weird, whatever happened in that year, I don't even know. But now we're like, oh, it's an immediacy. Like, we're in it. We are here in this moment. And I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud of what we did. And I know we are going to get people that are upset that we didn't, you know, do a photocopy, but I'm sorry to those people. I'm sorry, but we shan't ever do that.
Well, the alleys are very beautiful, and the Noahs are very
handsome.
Gorgeous. And
yes.
Handsome.
We did go with
attractive.
That. We did keep that one.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think I speak for all of us at the American Writers Museum when I say we can't wait to see it. And thank you to both of you for being here tonight and for this wonderful conversation. Thank you to everyone in the audience. I'm sorry we didn't have time to get to everyone's questions, but we asked as many as we could. Thank you to the Chicago Shakespeare Theater for your partnership on tonight's event. And let's give one more round of applause for our presenters.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to us. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, beloved children's book authors Andrea Beattie and Betsy Bird discuss their work and writing processes. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.